Appreciate Derek's Lord Sable. Transitions nicely into my lesson, I think. All right, can y'all hear me? Good? Good. So, in 2006, an injury in a college football game changed Inky Johnson's life. Inky Johnson played for the University of Tennessee. It was his junior year, and he was all ready to go to the NFL. He had 10 games left in the season. He was 10 games away from signing the contract to play in the NFL. All he had to do was play the games. That's all he had to do. After that, he was set. He'd be making millions of dollars. He would be able to help out his mom and his family. He could help his community. 10 games away. And in that game, Inky made a tackle that he said was a simple tackle that he could have done with his eyes closed. He hit the guy and fell limp to the ground. His teammates surrounded him, encouraging him to get up. But Inky couldn't get up. He couldn't move. He had passed out, and when he came to, there was a sharp pain all the way down his body and his right arm. That was the last game of football that Inky Johnson ever played. His injury left his right arm completely paralyzed, and to this day, he still can't use it. Inky went to the hospital after the injury, and they had to perform surgery because there's internal bleeding in the artery. But Inky wasn't only struggling physically. Mentally and emotionally, Inky had a bigger wound that he had to address. His whole life, Inky was working toward this goal, this dream of being in the NFL. From the time he was, I think he said about 9, he was working toward being in the NFL. He did everything right, took all the right steps, made all the right decisions. He was so close to his dream. So close. It was taken from him. In talking about his experience, Inky describes a dialogue he had with God. He says it was as if God was saying, "Not yet. I want to redirect you and take you this way." And Inky was saying, "But God, I'm right here. Like, let me get to the NFL, then redirect me, so I can help my family and help my community." God said, "No, I got something even greater, even sweeter. I know you can't see it right now, but I need you to trust me." And Inky said, "But God, I need you to trust me. Like, let me get it, God." God said, "No, I need you to trust me. Even though you can't trace me, I need you to trust me. I need you to follow what I got. Need you to rejoice in the midst of opposition, in the midst of adversity, in the midst of trials." And Inky said he needed to live Jeremiah 29, verse 11, which says, "For I know the plans that I have towards you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." God was saying, "Inky, I need you to trust me. Lord, I need you to trust me. I need you to trust me. Trust my plan, God. Trust what I have set out for myself. Trust me, God." Inky then talks about what he would have lost if he had not had the injury. When he was in the hospital and recovering, Inky's dad was with him through it all. Inky's dad stayed with him for 30 days straight in the hospital. Inky's dad never stayed under the same roof as him. Never, during his childhood. Eventually, his dad asked Inky how this God he prays to, this God he loves, could let this happen to him. Inky talks with him, and in time, his dad comes to believe in God. Then several of Inky's friends also came to believe. And then when people ask Inky if he could change what happened to him, he says no. He says if he had to compare the NFL to his father's and his friend's belief, 10 out of 10 times who choose his father's and his friend's belief. He said, because that is a real contract. It is long and is rich. It is more filling and it is sweeter. And that is what Inky got when he trusted God. When I heard this story, when I heard about Inky, and then when I heard Inky Johnson talk about his experience, it convicted me. You see, I'm a planner. I'm very goal-oriented. I hate unpredictability. It makes me uncomfortable. This convicted me because for the past 5 years or so, I've had a goal, and I still have that goal. For the past 5 years or so, I've dedicated hours, days, weeks, and months to the goal of becoming a therapist. I've taken all the right steps so far. I've completed my bachelor's at Simpson, and now I'm on to the next phase, which is graduate school. But I hit a roadblock. Not in terms of an academic roadblock where I won't be able to get into a school, but an emotional and mental roadblock. See, graduate school is, for therapy, is very competitive. In most schools, there are about 100 applicants each year, and a program selects between 5 and 10 students from that pool. So in order for me to ensure that I am accepted somewhere, I had to apply to multiple places. And the thing is, most of the schools I've applied to are out of state, with the exception of 3. Now it's my goal to get into Iowa State, into their counseling psychology program, so that I can stay in Iowa, stay here, and still attend church here. For the past 2 years, I guess, I've done everything that I can to make myself appealing to that school so that they select me. Then I applied at the end of last month, and that was the end of my part. Now it's up to professors there, professors at other schools too. So, unpredictability. And that makes me nervous. I don't like not being in control. I don't like not knowing. I hate unpredictability. And the roadblock is that if I do not get accepted into Iowa State, I don't know if I want to move out of state. Shelby and I would be gone for about 5 years, and I don't know if I want that or can do that. In all honesty, it scares me. It scares me. And that speech by Inky Johnson convicted me because I have a plan. I have a plan set up for myself, a plan that is comfortable, a plan that I made up, a plan that I'm pretty sure what the end result will be. My plan is to go to ISU, start our family, complete the program, and finally be a therapist. But there's uncertainty, and there's always a chance that that won't happen. And ever since I heard that speech, I've had a continual dialogue with God. God tells me in Romans 8, verse 28, that all things work together for the good of those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. God tells me that in all things, I'm to be thankful and to glorify him. Philippians 4, verse 4, Colossians 3, verse 23. God is telling me that no matter what happens in my life, his plan for me is that he will mold me and form me into his image. That's God's plan for me. In this dialogue I have with God, he's been asking me to trust him. Trust his faithfulness and his ability to guide me. And how do I respond? But God, I need you to trust me. I need you to trust me. I have the plan that I came up with, and I don't want to settle for alternatives. I was convicted because I do this with God all the time. God asked me so many times to trust him. Lord, I need you to trust me. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned evil. God considered Job and saw there was none like him in all the earth. God allowed Job to be afflicted, to be oppressed. Job lost all of his children, all of his land, all of his wealth. He lost his health. Job had a plan, I'm sure. Job had plans with his children. He had plans with his livestock and his property. And Job had goals. And God redirected him. God was telling Job, you need to trust me. Even though you have lost everything, even though you wish you were dead, you need to trust me. Even though you can't trace me, you need to trust me. Job 23, verses 8 through 12. Job 23, 8 through 12. Look, I go forward, but God is not there. And backward, but I cannot perceive him. When he works in the left hand, I cannot behold him. When he turns to the right hand, I cannot see him. But he knows the way that I take. And when he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot has held fast to his steps. I have kept his way and not turned aside. I have not departed from the commandment of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. Job did trust God. Through all of his trials, through all the pain, Job trusted God. And in the end of Job, God blessed him even more abundantly than before. Job could have easily argued with God, saying, God, I need you to trust me. Trust my plan. Trust my goals. Trust my integrity. How many trials do you face that are small compared to Job's? And how many of those trials and temptations do you tell God, but God, I need you to trust me. Trust my thoughts. Trust my abilities. Now Jacob loved Joseph more than all his children because he is the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. But Joseph's brothers were jealous and hated him. And his brothers sold him to traders as a slave. Joseph became a slave in Egypt, then a prisoner, and then he became the right hand of the Pharaoh. Joseph rose to this power because through everything he trusted God. God was with Joseph and showed him mercy. Everything that Joseph did, God made it prosper. Joseph had a lot of changes in his life. I'm pretty sure that he was comfortable with his father and his family. I'm sure he never dreamed of living anywhere else except with his family, except near his father. And Joseph had plans. He had goals. When he was sold as a slave, Joseph could have told God, I need you to trust me. When he was thrown in prison, Joseph could have told God, I need you to trust me. When he became a ruler in Egypt, Joseph could have told God, I got it from here. I got it. Just trust me. After Joseph rose to power and had to deal with a 7-year-long famine, he could have told God, trust me, I have a plan. I know how to handle this. Instead, Joseph listened to God and trusted what God was guiding him toward. Joseph trusted God's plans and God's abilities, and not his own. How many trials have you faced, and how many life changes that were small compared to Job's and Joseph's? And how many of those trials did you respond by telling God, trust me, I got this. I have a plan for how to get through this. How many times did the trial unfold, the change in your life unfold, and the end result was richer, was sweeter, and was more fulfilling than anything you could ever have planned for? That happened because God is working to guide us to joy and hope. That happens because God has the power to take any situation and make it a blessing. That's God's plan for us. God knows how we think and how we respond to negative events. His plan is not to make this life comfortable. His plan is to make us more like him. His plan is to direct me toward eternal joy and love. And I tell God, no, I need you to trust me. What am I shooting for? Honestly. What is my goal that I'm trying so hard to achieve? A little bit of comfort? A greater status, social recognition, entertainment, selfish ambition? What is it? That's low-hanging fruit. God is telling us he has something for us that is richer, sweeter, more prestigious, more comfortable, more joyous, and more fulfilling than all of that. And I told God, no, I need you to trust me. How much pride would it take for a burger flipper to tell the president, no, I need you to trust me. I know how to do this better. God is the creator of this universe. He's the creator of our minds. He sees all and knows all. God knows what is best for us better than we do. And we have the pride to respond to his call for us for our trust by saying, no, you should trust me. I know better than you do. My plan will be better for me than what you have in store. What pride and what disrespect. Not to mention how irrational this thinking is. The motivation for us to tell God, I need you to trust me, is that I want security. And one of the very few ways that we can experience security is when we have control, or when we perceive that we have control. I want God to trust my plan because I know my plan. I can control my plan, and therefore there is security for me. I don't want to trust what God has planned for me because I don't know what that is for sure. I know the end result is good, but I don't know what's going to happen along the way. I don't know how much discomfort, how much trials. I don't know what's going to happen along the way. And the funny thing is that I continue to think this way and respond this way despite the hundreds of times that my plan did not work out for my good. That is the irrational part of it. I can't keep track of how many times I have failed and let myself down when I was only following my plan. Yet I go and tell God to trust me. Trust me when God has not once shown himself to be unfaithful, not once has his plan not worked to our benefit. And I trust myself. The odd thing about humans that I'm beginning to learn is that God created us with an immense ability to learn, yet we refuse to do so. I should learn from my past mistakes that I can't trust myself, yet I insist that God trust me. You have the nerve to say, I could trust God if I saw evidence that he is trustworthy, while ignoring the mounting evidence telling us that we are untrustworthy. God wants us to trust him because ultimately he is where we will find security and control. It is only in heaven that we will be safe. It is only in heaven that we will be secure. It is only in heaven that we have predictability. That is the only predictability is in heaven. It is only in heaven that we have comfort. I want us to consider Peter. Turn to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew 16, verses 21 through 23. From that time, Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you. But he turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan, you are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but of the things of men. Luke 22, verses 31 through 34. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. But Peter said to God, Lord, I am ready to go with you, both to prison and to death. Then he said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny me three times. Verses 47 through 50 of that chapter. And while Christ was still speaking, behold, a multitude, and he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? And when those around him saw what was going to happen, they said to him, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. And that was Peter. Then verse 54 through 62. Having arrested Jesus, they led him and brought him to the high priest's house. But Peter followed at a distance. Now when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, This man is also with him. But he denied him, saying, Woman, I do not know him. And after a little while, another saw him and said, You also are one of them. But Peter said, Man, I am not. Then after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, Surely this fellow was also with him, for he is a Galilean. But Peter said, Man, I do not know what you are saying. Immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he said to him, Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went and wept bitterly. Peter had a plan. He was going to protect Jesus whatever it took. He was planning on dying for Jesus, being humiliated for Jesus, being put in prison for Jesus. But Jesus kept telling Peter he was going to die. Peter would have none of that. Peter had a plan, but God was asking Peter to trust him. But God needed you to trust me. Trust that I won't let anything happen to you. Trust that I will not betray you. Peter's plan, much like ours, failed. For we are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. God's plan was fulfilled, like it always has been and always will be. Peter was scared. He did not want to see Jesus lost. He didn't want to lose his relationship with Jesus. To deal with that fear, Peter, much like us, built a wall of security and control. He made a plan he thought was foolproof, a plan where he was comfortable. But Peter's wall was not made of brick or of stone. It was made of paper, tossed easily in the wind. Our plans that we make, our walls of protection, give us the illusion of security and control. We can plan all we want, account for all the alternatives, and take all the right steps, but it will never be enough. It will never be enough because true security comes when we wake up and realize that the control is God's. Not that God will handcraft experiences for us, but that God has the power and the ability to make every situation, every experience work out for our good. He has a plan to mold us into his image. He has a plan to provide us with eternal joy, love, peace, and safety. He's asking us to trust him. Even though we can't trace him, he's asking us to trust him. How will you respond? Will you say, No, I need you to trust me. I know what I have set out for myself, and it's good. Or will we take down our makeshift walls and say, God, I trust you. You have shown yourself to be faithful. For a long time, my favorite verse has been this.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding.
I don't know why I forget that. I literally have like three plaques in our apartment that have that verse written on them. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. I like the phrasing, God's telling us, you need to trust me. And we respond, but God, I need you to trust me. Notice the wording. God says, you need to trust me. That's our need. He knows our need. We're telling God, no, I need you to trust me. We're confused on the need. We think we need God to trust us so that our plan will unfold. God's telling us we need to trust Him because His plan for us is much better. It's much better. If you were here this morning and you have sin in your life like we all do, God is asking you to trust Him. Trust His justice, trust His mercy, trust His grace, trust His ability to save us all as He has already. God had a plan when He came to this earth. God's plan is perfect, and it happened. He carried it out. Even though He didn't want to, He carried it out for us. Because that was His plan. Because He wants us to have a richer, a sweeter, and more fulfilling life with Him in heaven.